We made this. Hello and welcome to We Buy Records. I'm Paul Field and I'm joined as ever by my amazing co-host, Mr. Tim Scullion.
That's me. Hello.
There you go. Did you like that intro, Tim?
Yeah, that was really good. How are you, Paul?
I'm very well. Really good. Been in Manchester all of last week.
Buying records.
At work and buying records. Before I came on air, Tim, I thought I'd ask listeners if they had any sort of last minute questions, anything we'd missed, because we're not very organised. I thought, oh, I wonder if there's tweets that we've missed where people have asked us stuff. And then, of course, we got a load of questions in.
Yeah, your timing is terrible because you asked about how long before we actually sat down to record.
About an hour.
Yeah.
I didn't think we'd get any replies. So, just to put this out there, charity shops and packaging are already on the agenda for a future episode. So they will be covered.
Don't panic, everybody.
Don't panic. However, Tom Berry, the lovely Tom Berry, he wants to know, why are you both so lovely? He says, take that as motivational impetus, go get them tigers. Thank you, Tom. We love you.
I bet he didn't really want us to read that out on air, did he?
Maybe. Ben Collins, when you started your shop, Tim, where did you get all the second-hand records to stock the shop when it opened? Did you build them up over time or buy a job lot?
That's a very good question. Mm. It's both. So it started because the short answer, because I've answered this question quite a lot, because it is people do.
I've never crossed my mind. Yeah.
So my partner Susan and I got together. Lovely, isn't it? It's a romantic story. And between the two of us, we felt that our record collection, you know, could happily be gone through and slimmed down a little bit. So we sort of generated a big box worth of records, took them to a car boot sale, and even though I thought it probably wouldn't work, I individually priced them all. So I had actually about sort of half of them were a quid, and then about half of them I individually priced, thinking no one is going to be willing to pay more than £2 or even a pound, I actually kind of thought, but let's try, because I know that they're worth more than that. And they sold amazingly well. And in fact, looking back, I really underpriced some stuff because I wanted to make sure the prices were good. So I massively underpriced. Because that went so well, I then started, when I was digging in charity shops and junk shops and stuff, I started thinking, well, I might want that. My justification was, I might want that, so I'll buy it. And if I don't want it, we can sell it. That quickly became, I hate that, but I know that someone will want that. And it snowballed from there. And then, yeah, I did start buying the odd job lot. I used to comb eBay a long time ago when people would not bother describing job lots very well. And I would chance my arm and it would be a fiver for like 10 boxes of rubbish records, but there'd be gems in there. You can't, these days, there's so many, because this was 8 years ago. These days there are so many like obsessive people combing eBay that's kind of ended. You don't really get interesting record job lots selling for £2 anymore. But yeah, and so eventually we had enough stock and we opened the shop.
Perfect. Stephen Green, our friend Beanie, he says, I've witnessed Paul in action. He is like a doof doof Dyson. And can you give me some Stackridge records to play instead?
Well, the thing is, we've already made you listen to Huey Lewis and the News.
Huey Lewis and the News, yes. And I think I listened to Genesis as well.
Did you?
Yeah, did I not tell you that? Oh, God. Matt Lamborn, as I live in a place that has one overpriced record shop and the Chazza selection is piss poor, would you stay in the hobby if you effectively had to buy all your records at new or full price? You see, for me, the thrill of the chase, finding something for less than its value, is part of the fun of, you know, record collecting and crate digging. on the Isle of Man where he lives, if there's nowhere to go and do that, I imagine that would be a quite a frustrating hobby.
I think you'd have to shift the emphasis to, if you didn't mind being online all the time, hunting for the bargains online. So, for example, when the soundofvinyl.com has a sale, when Juno has a 99p flash sale, when Amazon does a misprice on a box set, that, you know, and if that's not fun to you, then the answer is yeah, probably you're going to end up spending a hell of a lot. Oh God, I don't know. I don't know.
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a great question, though, Matt. If listeners have got a reply for Matt, then do let us know, please.
And is there nowhere on the Isle of Man? Is there not another town he can go to? I guess that's it, isn't it?
It's just Douglas, isn't it?
He could have a big one-year trip to the Utrecht Record Fair.
Perfect. There you go.
And just splurge out there, and then he's sorted for the next year.
Last bit of housekeeping, Tim. Rubbers. So many people have been buying rubbers.
Yeah, I know.
It's nothing more great, especially, you know, it was your tip. It must be really gratifying to see people have gone out, actually bought the bloody things,
and
used proven them.
And shown that they work.
They work.
Because they do.
They do.
I know. We are tempted to start stocking those rubbers in the shop, have a little display thing on the counter.
And then people are, why are you selling rubbers? And then you can whip out a before and after.
Hey, I hadn't even thought of that.
There you go.
Oh, that's clever. Thing is, it's, you know, the counter is already pretty much filled up with old Garbage Pail Kids sticker packs and stuff, so I don't know how much space we've got, but I'll see what we can do.
Should we do the news?
Yes. The news this week, Paul, which you're not privy to, so I get to have your reaction.
Oh, no.
Well, it's a kind of technological progress in music that is literally impossible with vinyl records.
Go on.
So vinyl may protect us from this future that I'm about to describe. A tech startup company called MXX has created what it says is the world's first artificial intelligence tech that allows users to automatically re-edit and restructure music according to their own requirements.
Right.
So the company says, businesses and individuals want to alter their experience with music depending on their needs. They want a world where music can be adapted to perfectly fit certain experiences, such as gym workouts and runs, gaming, user-generated content, and virtual or augmented reality experiences. Now, according to The Guardian, MXX's tech listens to music,
mm-hmm.
generates a mass of metadata, and then that data includes such things as where it can edit in and out of sections, and which bits might affect the human listener in different ways. For example, this feels like a building tension bit of the music, according to the AI. This feels like the chorus bit. This feels like a climax. This feels like a verse. When the user then provides a brief for the music, the AI can automatically edit music to fit the exact needs of the listener.
So can I add a banging donk to everything?
Literally everything. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Sign me up.
Well, I wondered, because you are more of a dance head than I am.
Yes.
So the concept of structured music and music that has been created to serve more of a sort of functional purpose, the function being getting off your nut.
Mm-hmm.
You're more used to that world anyway than I am. For me, music is a bit more namby-pamby and a bit more about an idiosyncratic individual's gentle little musings to, you know, you get enveloped into their strange world without a donk, right? But what I wondered if the next logical step could be we do away with dance music DJs, and instead what you have is a box with that AI inside it with a big dial on the front, and the dial sets the extent to which you want the roof taken off at any one particular point in the night. So you start with it at about 10 o'clock.
Like almost like a mechanical timer as it ticks round.
And then you see, if you think, yeah, the crowd have really gone for it tonight quite early, you can push it up soon. If it's a bit more of a chatty crowd, they're drinking, they're not there yet, you keep it low, and then you crank it at about 11 p.m.
Mm.
You see, the point of that was supposed to be that was like a dystopian future. Paul is going, now, yes.
Yes, please.
It's a fantastic idea. So it goes to show it depends depends how you want your music to be, doesn't it?
Plus, I could ruin all your favourite albums, all your sacred cows. I could come in and go, Tim, I put a banging donk on it.
Well, that's it. So let's say, you know, you feed Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon into the AI, and then you press a button that just turns it into an uplifting banger, or you press the button that strips away everything but the big choruses.
Yeah, more kick drum, more hi-hat.
So you're saying future of music, or hey, I'm saying future of music, fucking hell. That's basically where we are.
Exactly. So this week's City Report is...
Where have you been this week, Paul?
I have been in Manchester. Mainly in the centre. I've been to a lot of these stores before. But for some of them, it was a first visit. Let's just put this out there. Manchester is an absolutely fantastic city for record shopping.
Really?
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. You've got Oldham Street, which has a nice little cluster of decent shops. So the main seller of new records is Piccadilly Records. Everyone,
the famous Piccadilly
Records.
Very
famous. They carry such a diverse stock. It's just brilliant.
Is it a big shop?
Yeah, it's quite a good, really good size. There was something that really stuck out for me in there. They had still in stock a really obscure Medusa Edit 12-inch. Do you know what these are?
No.
They were, I think they're US re-edits of post-punk, new wave and industrial tunes, famous
but
ones.
But sort of stretched out and made a bit more...
bit more club-friendly, oh, but only great, though, very, actually. Very slightly.
No, that sounds brilliant. So that kind of like minimal new wave, synthy, dark wave stuff.
Yeah.
But sort of...
Yeah, there's like the Susie and the Banshees that they've done one of that was really good. And each one comes with three or four tracks.
Are they bootlegs?
Yeah, they're all bootlegs. Very obscure. They had those in stock, which is completely blew my mind. I already had most of them. I'm missing a couple. Really sought after.
So what was their kind of as new price in Piccadilly then?
So their prices
were $7.99 or
I think
something?
They were $11. But they are obscure. That's probably what they're worth because they're really small runs. I mean, they had a whole section of Yacht Rock, for God's sake.
Did they?
Yes, new Yacht Rock.
Yeah, but we could do that, but we choose not to do that.
Yes. I mean, you know, if you want new records and you want a really good choice of new records, I can't fault Piccadilly. It must be one of the best new vinyl shops in the country, if not the best.
And you were happy with their sort of their pricing policy as well?
New is new, and it's in the city centre. You're going to, you know, it might be a couple of quid more than online, but, you know.
But you didn't feel that they were
no, God,
it.
No.
Fantastic.
Then literally just down the road, you have the Vinyl Exchange.
Again, a legendary...
legendary shop. Really good here because they also have all their stock online. Upstairs is CDs and new records. Downstairs is all vinyl, where they keep all the dance stuff as well.
Again, big space, isn't it?
Big space, yeah. So what you could do, if you go online in advance, as I've done on a previous visit, gave the guy a bit of paper with the stuff I wanted. He helped me find some of them because it's not always immediate. There's a lot of subgenres in there and stuff which straddles.
Is it quite a dance oriented shop, would you say?
No, you've got the one side is dance, but the other side you've got indie and rock and pop, and you know, everything's covered. So if you look online in advance, you can save yourself a load of time. If you're not busy, you know, the guy, they'll help you out. They'll go and find stuff for you.
Brilliant.
Perfect. And then you can get down to the crate digging because there are dozens of crates on the floor, in the centre of the floor, a massive crate. You can pull them out from underneath the main shelves.
And what are the prices of the bargain records?
Pound. Yeah, they're nearly all. There's another section that has cheap albums for a couple of quid, 2 quid, 3 quid. Yeah, really, you know, really priced to shift.
And so did you find good stuff?
I didn't really do... I did the first time I went, I looked through them all. This time, I just didn't have enough time. You really... Because once you start...
It's hours of work, isn't it?
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
I remember losing hours in some of the London music and video exchanges, just hunting through there. You know, the basement would be tens of thousands of records.
Yep. Moving off Oldham Street to round the corner, you've got Eastern Block, which is the dance shop. I'm guessing it's a shadow of its former self, because downstairs you have a bar and cafe. You go up some stairs to what is effectively like a balcony, and that's where the record shop is now. It's all new. Drum and bass, jungle, dubstep, house, techno, electronica.
But they know what they're getting in, though.
They know what they're getting in. You know what you're going to get in there. There is not crates. Weirdly, as you go up the stairs to get to the balcony where the records are, the walls have shelves in them, and they're lined with the cheap stuff. So it's not crate digging, it's more sort of wall flicking. Afflex is a large building with loads of like smaller shops.
Run by Ben Affleck, isn't it, I think?
Yes, exactly, yes. Right at the top, you've got the vinyl resting place.
Is that what it's called?
Yep, been there before. The first time we went in...
I can't decide if that's a great name or a terrible name.
Well, the first time I went in there, the guy working there had a Mute Records t-shirt on.
Oh, so it's great. Yeah.
It was instantly 5 stars... No problems. Loved it.
Going, oh, Paul.
I know. I did buy quite a lot of stuff on my first visit. On this visit, however, everything was properly jammed in.
Which, of course, we talked about last week.
And I mean really jammed in. And
does he not listen to our podcast?
Clearly not. So it has a really good selection of 60s and 70s. Then you've got sort of your punk, new wave, rock and pop. But rock and pop, that's quite a big area. And you've got quite a lot of very deep crates going back a long way.
And it's all just rock and pop.
Yeah, not ordered. It's a challenge to find stuff. And I just didn't have the patience this time.
It's funny, in the shop that I run with my partner, our rock and pop section is tiny because... we find that most records that are worth us stocking are, if you like, too interesting to just be rock and pop. So they might be art rock, you know, so Bowie and Roxy Music and Eno and stuff will go into the art rock section. It might be country rock, folk rock, so that's where Neil Young or the Byrds would go.
All the big artists had their own section. Let's just put that out there as well. Okay. It was just a mishmash. It's slightly frustrating because then you're... So you've got artist sections, and then you've got another rock and pop section, and then you've got your indie section. But they were just, there was too much jammed in.
Well, what I was going to say was people, I think, in our shop are quite confused and disappointed by how small our rock and pop section is. Because it means that they have to look all over the place to sort of find people. Like the decent artists you'll get in rock and pop are probably Madonna and Bruce Springsteen. that's pretty much it for good stuff. But and so you get this little measly rock and pop section where, yeah, a lot of shops will have a huge set sort of pop music. But I find most of it... So a lot of pop music is actually synth pop, for example, and so that goes into synth pop.
Yep.
So we struggle to find enough good stuff to go into rock and pop. It's just... Paul, it's a little aside. That's all it is. Just to break up... your city report.
Anyway, it's still a great shop. There's still a lot of good, you know, collectible stuff in there. You can find a few bargains. The card machine wasn't working when I was there, so I only spent a fiver, but I did get a new order 12-inch I was missing for a fiver.
Fantastic. What was the 12-inch?
I can't remember.
Excellent, Paul.
Excellent.
Research done as ever.
Oh,
can I throw in another aside, because you just reminded me?
Yep.
I was in a junk shop in Hove... last week, which had a few record sellers, and it's one of those shops where, you know, the person behind the counter will log what was sold and then give that money to the right seller.
Yeah, maybe, I know
maybe
exactly
take
what
a commission,
you mean.
Maybe not. Maybe they just get a weekly fee, whatever. So I found a couple of things, and I got up to £19 worth of spend. I put them on the counter for him, and I saw the card machine, so I got out my card. And he said, "Oh, it's cash only. You have to go around the corner to get money out." And I said, "Oh, is the cash machine broken then?" And he said, "Oh, well, it's really temperamental." So, and I said, "Do you know what? I'll leave it then," because I just felt it in my bones that he just didn't want to have it go through the card machine so it could be logged as an exact sale, so that he would either, for tax purposes or for paying out the correct amount to his stallholder people. And so when I said, "Oh, you know what, I'll leave it then," he said, "Oh, well, we'll try." And it worked perfectly first time.
Oh, that surprised him.
So that's just, yeah, something that made me think about, yeah, shopkeepers and, yeah,
while on the
that,
subject...
That's of, now the end of that aside.
While on the subject of the Afflex building, there's a new pop-up in there.
Ooh.
That sells only cassettes.
Oh, you're kidding.
Nope. I thought, ooh, I'm going to find some, you know, some good stuff here.
So secondhand cassettes.
Secondhand and new. And
seriously, only cassettes.
Only cassettes. It says it's the UK's only specially curated cassette-only shop or something. Yes.
Yes, I could have told you that.
Do you know what?
Was it brilliant?
It was rubbish.
Oh, right.
Couldn't find a single desirable cassette. You know, like, the you want 90s stuff. You want to find, like, Blur cassettes you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Nothing. It was just toot.
Was it all, like, kind of schmaltzy crooners on tape and, like,
well,
you know?
It had it by era, but I just thought it was... I say it was all too. It wasn't. There was nothing there that I wanted to buy. It just they just did not, you know, like Five Star and Whitney Houston. Do you know what I mean? Like really, just.
Although you say that Whitney Houston will sell.
Maybe, but it's there was no kind of indie anything edgy or any
really?
Dance. No, just it was just not good at
there
all.
There weren't any like Fantasia 16 cassette.
No, nothing like
fold
that.
Out box sets.
See, I would have picked those up.
I know you would.
No. Oh.
Still, it may be a new shop and maybe it's still getting its collection
together. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I wish them all the luck because I really wanted to buy some stuff, but I just couldn't find anything.
Do they sell ghetto blasters and tape decks?
They
as
do,
well?
And Walkmans,
do they?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I like that element of it then.
Second visit to Vinyl Revival, which is just off Oldham Street in Hilton Street. Second time, didn't buy anything.
Oh.
Nice shop. Nice prices, nice enough fella working in there. Just not for me. It's just really boring stock.
Beard music.
Well, there's a mixture of rock, pop, beard, local music. But, it's, you know, it's like Ultravox albums. And, you know, you go into the 80s or the synth pop section and you're looking for something a little bit different. Or it was all so average. Maybe it was just potluck that the two times I've been in there, there hasn't been anything interesting.
Could it be the thing that we find, and I think we've talked about before, about if you price your stock sensibly enough, all the good stuff sells the quickest.
Yeah.
And so then the challenge can be to replenish this stuff. So to find more Bowie albums, more Rolling Stones albums, you know, more Gary Numan albums to put in each genre, because actually you've priced them to sell, then they sell, then you've got to find more. So people are always asking us, say, for Joni Mitchell, and we never have any, because when we get it, it sells, you know, within a week.
Yep.
It could that be what's happening here?
Yeah, absolutely. Every chance that's
the case.
Because
if you
thought
the prices were fair, then probably in Manchester Centre to find a shop with fair prices, you're going to go there, aren't you?
Just seems weird that all the other places with fair prices had stuff that I wanted on pretty much on both my visits.
We may never know the answer.
We never know. My lovely friend Rachel met me in Manchester on Tuesday and we had a little late afternoon shopping. She took me to two shops I'd never been to before.
Oh.
Clamp Down Records on Patton Street. He had Depeche Mode bootlegs.
Ah.
That I didn't have and wanted.
What? Really? So old bootlegs?
Older ones, yep.
Fantastic.
Yep, he had some promos. They had some other Mute stuff. They had quite a lot of Erasure promo-only stuff that I was missing. And I was like, oh, this is fantastic.
And was the guy wearing a Mute t-shirt?
He was not wearing a Mute t-shirt. Unfortunately, all priced by a lunatic.
No.
Yeah.
Were you able to chip them down? Oh, no.
Didn't buy anything. Didn't buy any of them. It's hugely frustrating. I thought, I'm not paying that. Because when stuff, you know, I was looking at Discogs average £2 for one of them and he wants a tenner and the other one's like, you know, he wants 35 quid and it's worth 15 and I'm just like, no point.
Oh God, you must have been crushed.
Oh, it is what it is. So, do you know what? I've become a lot more militant since doing the podcast. I just won't. I'm not, you know, in a previous life, I probably would have
just
bought,
you would
some
have bought
of them.
Something. Yeah.
And I just thought, you know what? No. Not doing. I'm not buying. I'm not encouraging this nonsense. They had a huge section on Manchester bands, a whole section of New Order. They had loads of Smiths. But even there, by the door, you know, almost to prop the door open, bucket of shame. In your shop, would be, all definitely be pound bin.
Yeah.
I'm flicking through them, and he had some like old Rhythm King, real tatty promos, all worth 50p, £3, £4, £2, £3. And I'm like, no, it's no good. Didn't buy anything. And then we went to the Empire Exchange, which is a basement. I don't want to be unkind to call it a junk shop. They were nice people. They had a case of knackered old 8-track cassettes, proper mouldy falling apart. They had racks and racks and racks of absolutely knackered 12-inches. I think they're only a pound, but you'd struggle to find anything.
So knackered discs, the actual vinyl
just
was all
scruffy,
kind of,
old scratch 5-star 12-inches, you know, Milli Vanilli, quite a lot of Frasier Chorus 12-inches. I think somebody dumped their whole collection in there, but none of them had any value. The albums, again, are all pretty dull, lackluster, poor condition. He did have a few collectibles on the counter, but yeah, you may find something in there if you're prepared to spend the time, and you know, it's something they've missed. But yeah, it was not good. I think Rachel liked it. I think she said she found Violator for a fiver in there. So you can...
Blimey.
Yeah. But then I found it for a fiver not long ago in Rye.
What, a first British
press?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, in his £5 rack. And then I've saved the best till last. Friend of the show, Beanie.
Hi, Beanie.
We got a tram to Chorlton and went to King B Records, second visit there. First time I went, had some really nice promos and rare imports that I wanted. Went back again, and he had more in again.
Fantastic. Where's he getting them from then? How
that's
is this happening?
Two random visits, completely, you know, I haven't been there for over a year. What you need to do there is most of the collectibles are online. So he'll ring downstairs and someone will appear with them and bring them up.
So is it quite a big shop again? Is it quite
no,
a big operation?
No, it's just like a normal standard sort of high street shop. It's quite old. It looks a little bit run down.
Okay.
He's got a fantastic selection of pretty much everything. 50s, 60s, 70s, crates, loads and loads of bargain crates of pound dance, £2 dance, collectible dance, mixed rock and pop, £2, £3, you know, really...
And stuff that's worth having.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Brilliant.
Bought a really nice stack, haggled him down.
Was he all right with that, Paul?
He was, yes.
All right, good, yeah.
So really pretty. We always mentioned them, but I got two Depeche Mode promos that I was missing, but with custom picture cover promos as well. I got them for about 50% of the Discogs price for the
fantastic
pair. So, yeah, there are some other shops in Manchester. I didn't get round to them all.
You did pretty well, I think.
I did pretty well. It probably, as it stands at the moment, the best city in the country for buying records. It's better than London. Way better than London.
Because London is more picked clean, do you think, and maybe more expensive to have a shop there. I suppose there's a few reasons.
Yep. Finding secondhand stuff, it's always, you know, overpriced. But geographically as well, you've got that
spread
out. You've got some shops in the East End now. You've got Notting Hill. You've got Soho. But there aren't many, and they are quite spread out. And it can be a right ball ache to get to them.
Whereas you could easily do a day of Manchester, I suppose, or 2 days and sort of hit them all.
Yeah, you could probably hit most of them in a day. Plus, you've got that little bit of excitement, because you never know what you're going to find, and you've got places to actually have a proper good old dig in.
That's fantastic. So overall, you'd say have a trip to Manchester and go dig in.
Definitely.
Now, we asked people on Twitter. I know I've actually had some feedback from a listener who's not on Twitter, who is slightly frustrated by our slight Twitter centricism. It's not a word, but that's what it is.
It's the only platform we use, so...
If anyone on Twitter has got any suggestions of how we can avoid being so Twitter focused, do let us know.
With that in mind,
we asked Twitter to suggest any albums, releases, soundtracks, whatever that they love that came out on CD or cassette but have never had a vinyl release. So what is your dream item that never came out on vinyl that you would like to see happen? And this is within the context of the music journalist Pete Perfides has got a new label, I believe, called Needle Mythology, which seeks to reissue items that never before came out on vinyl. And there's an Ian Broody of the Lightning Seeds solo LP, which is seeming to drive the critics crazy with happiness at the moment. I need to check that out.
I've seen lots of people tweeting about how good it is. Mm.
So, tweeting on what platform is that on? That's
on Twitter.
Oh, right, okay. So, yeah, Daryl Wilkes has pointed that out to us. So thank you very much, Daryl. We've had a few interesting examples of stuff that's never come out on vinyl. Paul, do you want to talk us through a couple?
Yeah, so Ian Greaves is after Kanye West's
friend
album.
Of the show.
Yes, founder of the show. The Kanye West album, Life of Pablo. Now, I looked this up, and as he points out, there are lots and lots of bootlegs. And they're all awful, apparently. I can't believe Kanye hasn't got... It's crazy, isn't it? Tom Berry, Man After My Own Heart, and this has been mentioned on the podcast before, an album that I want desperately to come out on vinyl, which is the Human Traffic soundtrack.
Now, did he put this without any prompting from you?
I think he heard it on the podcast, but also... And he also owns, the only other person I know who owns, there's one 12-inch, I think it might even be a promo, from the film that was released, and he has a copy as well, because I posted a picture, and he went, snap, Beanie... He is after Smurfs Go Pop, which is only available on CD.
No, he isn't.
Beanie collects like children's music. We are a broad church, Tim. Stop pulling a face every time Beanie's name gets mentioned. By the way, you know I said he owns that Katie Price album?
Yes.
Did you see the you know, that platform? Did you see the picture he posted on it?
Yes, I did.
How many copies has he got?
Was it about seven?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something wrong with... I don't think you should hang around with him anymore. Right, moving on, what else have we got here? Phonic Underground, we'd like to see a vinyl release of The Bingo Kids doing Beatles hits for kids, which I have to assume is real. Mark Turnbull would like to see any release by White Rose Transmission. Haven't heard of them.
Don't know who they are. I did look them up. Their CDs are expensive as well.
Well, someone I have heard of, this was asked for by two people, Mark and David, both would like to see a vinyl issue of White Ladder by David Gray.
Now,
how can that not be on vinyl?
I must have tripped over 500 copies in charity shops in the last six months alone.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? You would think even just to make money, they would have knocked out, let's say, 10 years after their album, because the album's more than 10 years old now. You would have thought, on its 10th anniversary, knock out a vinyl press of that album.
There must be politics in play. I cannot believe that hasn't been released on vinyl.
I think you're probably right. A couple of soundtracks that have never come out on vinyl. Stephanie Ireland would like to see The Departed be released on vinyl. And Soul Scorch would like to see, and this, I can't believe this doesn't exist on vinyl, the soundtrack to Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
Incredible.
How is that not on vinyl? And in fact, Paul, you've got a soundtrack as well.
Well, another one, which is famous for the music in the film.
I can't believe this isn't on vinyl.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That's bonkers. There is a Japanese-only bootleg. I think there are two or three variants as a coloured variant. They never come up for sale. I've been after even the bootleg since forever, and I can't find one.
But again, that must be some kind of rights issue.
It's got to be licensing, isn't it? Doesn't he sing a Beatles song in it? Is that what it is, do you think?
Oh, yeah.
It's not they'll take the money. Yellow, they don't care. It's not... Let me put this out there. Yellow aren't holding up the vinyl release of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
But that's got to be a guaranteed. If they did that for... Even whether for Record Store Day or just as a regular thing, that would just sell so many copies, wouldn't it?
We've got a few more to finish on. Catherine is after Kelly Alley's Psychic Cat and Juliet Random Order. Fact 13 is after Skinny Puppy's The Processed and Mark Almond's Fantastic Star.
Surprised to see any Mark Almond album not released on vinyl.
It must be a really late one, is it? Or sort of that early 2000s or something like that? I don't know. I've never heard of it. Tim?
Well, there's speaking of early 2000s, a band who are very close to my heart, because I, you know, they were there at the right time for me, is the sort of novelty Bowie pop group David Devont and His Spirit Wife. Now, their first album, which weirdly was on Rhythm King, not known for jangly, glammy indie revival.
They had some
bands.
Really weird signings. It was like 90% dance and then 10%.
David Devont and His Spirit Wife.
Yeah, there's some folk stuff on there as well. It's odd.
It is odd. So their debut album came out on vinyl, Rhythm King. Then they were dropped by the label. And I think that the label still owes them money, by the way. And then they've released a couple of albums since then as a more self-released kind of endeavour, and none of them on vinyl. That would be nice to see that. And also another cult niche band that I really like, Silver Sun, their first album got a vinyl release, and I don't think any of their other albums have. So my vote would be for David Avant and Silver Sun, both nerdy indie bands, but I love them.
Oh, we've got one more here. We missed Fenland Gent. He's after the Fountains of Wayne, Welcome Interstate Managers.
Yeah, surprised that's not on vinyl. Very surprised. I've got their first one on vinyl, second one on CD. I've got that on CD. Very good band. Good American power pop. You wouldn't understand, but they are.
I had heard of them, though, which is a miracle in itself.
You've probably only heard of them because of Stacey's Mom, which was a big hit for them. No, Paul's looking blank. You've just heard the name.
Not got a clue.
So, Paul, I'm sure you have not failed to notice that Morrissey has been in some hot water politically recently.
Yes, he vocally support Mr. Tommy Robinson?
I think he did.
And was then seen sporting a Britain First badge.
And then doubling down on it.
Yeah.
As, to be fair to Morrissey, unlike most racists who bash Islam for their treatment of animals, he has at least given a shit about animals for longer than 5 minutes and has not just used animals as a stick to beat Islam with. So hats off to him for that, not for much else. If people don't know, Morrissey has always flirted with uncomfortable opinions. Like, it was a long time ago, he said, "I don't believe that black people and white people will ever really get on," or words to that effect. Nice one, Moz. He wrote a song called Bengali in Platforms with a lyric that included, "Life's hard enough when you belong here." Nice one, Moz. But recently he's outdoing himself, basically, and not being a groovy cat.
He has had some people rush to his defence.
Has he? Who's been rushing to Morrissey's defence?
Nick Cave.
So Nick Cave, you're quite right, has weighed in basically saying we should try and separate the art from the artist, which is a conversation that I have in our shop a lot of the time, because there are a lot of artists where you would need to separate them from their art. Nick Cave actually, he said something which did sort of, I thought, oh yeah, that's quite a good point about this. He said, Morrissey's music, and this you could apply to anyone who you might think, can I still listen, can I still enjoy them? His music through the years has enhanced the lives of his many fans beyond recognition. And I think so. Nick Cave's point is we should be really careful to throw stuff in the bin. You know, it needs to be a fucking good reason to throw this stuff in the bin when it has. And you know, I still am, but I was such a big Smiths fan and solo Morrissey fan. And I think it is fair to say that their music, his music, has enhanced my life to a huge degree. So do I want to chuck that away?
Well, full disclosure,
You did do that.
I did do that, yes. So I got rid of all of my Smiths and Morrissey records. Weirdly, 90% of them sold, the ones that I sold online, sold to either South America or to people with Latin names in California. So I'm guessing they were Mexican. So they all went to Mexico, Brazil, or California. All of them.
They do. He's got such a following in South America and Central America. It's extraordinary. It feels like he's the sensitive side of thuggery for them in a funny way, because he's got the quiff and the rockabilly gang look. I think they feel like here's someone who looks like one of our sort of slick back hair gang people, but he's really sensitive. And it's just struck this chord with Latino people. It's really interesting.
From a We Buy Records perspective, though, I think I got out with at the market when it was still good. I could see what was coming and I got out, cashed in.
You did well, on Saturday we had quite a busy day, and Susan said to me, so Susan did most of the selling on Saturday. She was behind the counter for most of the day. And she said to me at the end of the day, we sold 3 Smiths singles today, all to young people.
Interesting.
So there is still life in the back catalogue yet. Morrissey isn't the first person to be politically dubious. And so, right, okay, let me give you some examples of people who have done this, have been politically dodgy, and it doesn't seem to have affected anybody's desire to buy their records. Nico, the German singer, famous for her work with the Velvet Underground, is alleged to have held deeply horrible, offensive, far-right, racist views throughout her life, it seems. She would, I think she sang, she impromptu sang the banned part of the German national anthem at a gig, the part that was banned for being just so overtly National Socialist. She has sort of attacked a black person, I think, and said, "I hate black people." So not especially groovy, but has it hurt sales of the Velvet Underground and Nico?
I'm guessing not.
No, it hasn't. Another 60s icon, Brigitte Bardot, who did some amazing work with Serge Gainsbourg, and that stuff is still highly sought after and reissues still sell well. She's come out with some really appalling slurs against gays and ethnic minorities, and she's a big fan of the French National Front.
Oh, lovely.
That doesn't seem to have hurt her, does it?
It's just a lot of it's down to reporting, isn't it? Whether the media get hold of it and want to go after you or not.
Well, if they think, yeah, so in the case of Nico and Brigitte Bardot, they've both been reported on, but yeah, it's not front page NME splash material, is it?
No.
Rest in peace. Whereas Moz draping himself in a British flag as he did in the mid 90s, that's going to shift some papers, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you've got some appalling behaviour from, you've got Ozzy Osbourne. I mean, have you watched The Dirt, I guess?
Didn't I did,
you?
Yeah.
When he appears, where in real life he's alleged to have turned up in a dress, snorted live ants, and then drank piss, which you do see on screen. It's on Netflix, if you haven't seen it. Very enjoyable.
I thought that made him alleged. Is that not right?
It's possible.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that makes him alleged.
And then Marilyn Manson, who was blamed for Columbine.
Yeah, that's quite a heavy thing to shake off, isn't it? Although, interestingly, I believe that those who know those boys well said that they actually thought that Marilyn Manson was really lame and he wasn't proper scary industrial music like what they liked. But it actually didn't suit Marilyn Manson's image necessarily. I thought that was really interesting at the time, that his attitude was, yes, they did like me, but that isn't the point. When in fact, it would have been braver for him to have said, no, they thought I was lame. But he didn't do that.
And then, of course, we have people who have committed sexual offences.
There's lots of them.
There are. And value-wise, I mean, for example, R. Kelly quite recently has been accused of various crimes. And off the back of that, as I go in charity shops a lot, his CDs were literally flooding in. They were absolutely everywhere. People were dumping their R. Kelly CDs.
But not dumping their Rick James or James Brown records, both of whom either found guilty of or alleged to have beaten women, you know, abused them, locked them up, tortured them.
Phil Spector
sliding cream crackers under the door because that's the food stuff that would fit for his prisoner.
Oh my God, I didn't know
that.
It's gone really dark.
But well, that's fine. The Phil Spector Christmas album is still a healthy Grimble's cellar.
To go really dark, I was in Bernardo's.
If you are affected by these issues, you may want to skip the next 30 seconds of the podcast.
Oh no, I went to Bernardo's, very well respected children's charity, went to the CD section right at the front, lost profits. Looked at the old lady behind the counter and thought, do I say something?
Because you might have thought, how deep a conversation am I going to have with this woman to explain to her why she shouldn't
exactly
be having the CD?
And I said, you probably shouldn't be displaying this in a children's charity. And she said, why? I said, there were some offences committed against children. Oh, no, are you sure? I said, look, really? And, you know, that was pretty much it. And she did take it and put it in the bin.
Excellent. For nice work, Paul. I was in a charity shop a few days ago. And I was chatting to the woman behind the counter and I mentioned my amusement at seeing a book on the shelf that was a sex guide for Christians. And she said, oh God, really? Which one? Yeah, we shouldn't be saying that. And I said, oh no, I think it's okay. I don't think it's like really explicit. I think it's, you know, I wouldn't worry about it. She said, no, it's the religious stuff. we've been told that we're not allowed to sell any overtly religious books. So the sex, the red-hot Christian sex, the sex part is fine. It's Christ being there that's the issue.
There are some ones who seem to have not got away scot-free, but not had a massive impact on value of their records. For example, Bill Wyman. Mandy Smith was 13. Elvis, his prices have dropped for different reasons, but Priscilla was only 14.
How are you supposed to navigate it? What, you know, because there's it, the concept of times were different then. It only goes so far that I, you know. So yes, when I guess when Elvis married Priscilla, was that legal?
I think it probably was at that time.
So
yeah.
Then you could say, okay, well, times were different in that case. You know, Romeo and Juliet. Juliet was 12, I think.
We're not here to judge people. It was just an interesting conversation about how people's behaviour sometimes has an impact on the value of their records and the collectability and desirability, and sometimes it has no bearing at all. Michael Jackson had some stuff in the press recently, been on TV, various allegations. I don't, although we've been joking about it a little bit, I don't think it's had that much of an impact, has it?
You hear him everywhere all the time on the radio, all the time. And when his stuff comes on, I tend to think, Jesus Christ, it's another banger from Michael Jackson. And I think that's a big part of it, is that his music, his hits are just too interwoven into our society, that there would have to be such horrifically undeniable proof that he's done something just beyond unspeakable, and it's the physical smoking gun for us to give up on his bangers.
Not to take the moral high ground, but a friend at a Red Top told me about what was going on years ago, like 10 or more years ago. So even if I see stuff at a boot fair or whatever, I just won't touch it.
We're currently not really buying Michael Jackson. We're just kind of not really buying it, not really putting it out for sale. And it's not an absolute hard and fast rule. It's just we're kind of... Yeah, at the moment, we're, you know, yeah, maybe we'll give you this bag back and we'll buy these ones off you and he'll be in there. But it's a kind of softly, softly thing because he's not been proven guilty.
No.
His music is good. I know that shouldn't... Oh, God, it's Paul. It's difficult because as a buyer and seller of records, people in my position have some impact. We have never had a Gary Glitter record in the racks. We have never had a Rolf Harris record in the racks. And that's not true of most record shops. When you flick through their 50p...
Oh, I see them all the time.
All the time. We have never, ever had either of those artists in the racks. There is a... We have once sold a glam rock double LP compilation, which did have a Glitter track on it.
They've just re-released one of the Now albums for the first time on CD, and they've taken Gary Glitter out. I think it's now 3...
Interesting.
Mm.
So I do feel like record shops slightly lead the conversation, because if some artists just disappear, you know, that sends a signal to the buyers. If every record shop is still stuffed full of Michael Jackson, that's sending a signal that, like, look, we're the arbiters and we're saying it's fine. Whereas Glitter,
no,
a proper record shop isn't going to put him in the rock and pop at a tenner. You know, he might accidentally be in the bargain bin, and frequently is, but only in the bargain bin, in my experience. Any thoughts people have, you can reach us on Twitter at WeBuyRecordsPod. I know it's a really, really difficult subject, so we would welcome either facetious replies or sincere comments. Because one thing, with either people spreading hate speech or people... doing horrible things to other people, I know it's a very modern trendy word, but people are triggered by that, people are affected by that. If you are someone who has been a victim of the kind of abuse that these people have done, and then they are effectively let off, how does that make you feel?
No, absolutely. I think, you know, we shouldn't really be making jokes about it, but yeah, it's such a tough one.
And the list is growing and growing and growing of musicians that it applies to, either politically or, you know, sexually or whatever. It's such a list.
That's why I won't spend £200-300 on a record, just in case they get cut off.
What about people that have tattoos of these artists?
Oh.
Sometimes I wonder if people argue for the separation of art and artist because it makes their lives much easier.
Yeah, could well be. Easy way to cope with it and deal with things.
What do you think, Twitter? Thanks.
So, Tim, this week's quiz I've been to
drawing a line under the previous conversation.
Yeah,
let's
that was
have a quiz.
Very dark. I was in a charity shop, and I've picked up the Marks and Spencer's "Will You Be the First to the Buzzer" music trivia box set. Ooh. I think I paid £1.
A pound.
Yep, whole pound. For ages 8+ for 2+ players. Playing time 20 minutes. I've picked out 10 questions that I didn't know the answer to.
Right.
Okay. I suspect you're going to get most of these. Going to be quick fire.
Is it question one, who were the Beatles?
Listeners, keep your own score and do tweet us in at We Buy Records Pod with your score and see. Don't cheat.
See if you can beat me.
See if you can beat Tim.
So these are questions that you read the question,
yep,
and you could not answer.
Didn't know the answer.
Okay.
Okay.
Here we go.
Which famous singer played drums with the Jimi Hendrix Experience at the BBC, aged only 17? I'll have to hurry you.
Fuck. I don't know. Oh, no.
Stevie Wonder.
What?
Tim's now reading the card because he doesn't look happy about this. This is just going as well as I expected.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get naught. Wow, okay.
Which band were originally called On a Friday? Is it? Do you know it?
Yes.
Go.
It's Radiohead.
Correct. What is the title of Morrissey's debut novel? List of the Worst, List of the Lost, A Bulbous Salutation.
List of the Lost.
Correct. Who performed at the halftime show of the Super Bowl in 2015? One Direction, Katy Perry, Beyoncé.
Katy Perry.
Correct. In 1968, David Bowie formed his own mime troupe. What was it called? Feathers, Ruffles, or the Starmen?
Feathers.
Correct. Joy Division were named after a children's football league. True or false?
False.
Correct. Kurt Cobain's middle name was Donald. True or false?
True.
Correct. Which rock group were formerly known as the High Numbers?
Was it the Small Faces?
No, it was the Who.
Oh, I was going to say the Who. And
Broken,
then I changed my mind.
Broken Strings was a hit for James Morrison and which female artist?
No idea.
Jessie J, Christina Aguilera or Nelly Furtado?
Christina Aguilera.
Wrong. Nelly Furtado. Last question. The 1960s folk group Peter, Paul and Mary had the surname Yarrow, Stooky and Travers. True or false?
True.
Correct. You're 8 out of 10.
Yeah, but I should have got the Who. I really should have got the Who.
Yeah, I didn't know any of those. So next time, Tim, I'll leave the questions.
They weren't easy questions. Well, no, I expect them to be easy, even though you hadn't got them.
Okay.
I thought they'd still be
easy. Well, because I didn't know them, I didn't know whether they were difficult or easy.
So I feel confident that there will be listeners who beat me on that.
You reckon?
Yeah. Because I think, did I get 6 or 7 out of 10?
I think you got 8.
No, because I got the Who wrong. I got Nelly Furtado wrong.
So you got 7.
Yeah. So 7 is the score to beat.
7 is the score to beat, listeners. Do tweet in and let us know.
Everyone will have been screaming at the speaker when I got the Who wrong, I can tell you that for sure.
So next, Tim, your challenge next time, we're going to leave the questions with you. Mm-hmm. I need you to find 10 questions which you think I will get right.
I bet there aren't 10 questions in there that you will get right. There's not going to be 10 questions about 80s house music and mute records. But I will try, Paul. I will try.
Well, there you go. The gauntlet has been dropped.
It's a good gauntlet.
So that's it for this week. Join us next time for more adventures in vinyl on
We
Buy
Records.